Welcome into another edition of American Ag Today, produced by the American Ag Network. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. While the cold temperatures of winter can be hard on every aspect of a farm, including the batteries and equipment farmers put into hibernation during the cold months, Josh Goldsworthy is the product manager for batteries at Case IH Aftermarket Solutions. He talks about some potential problems that producers can run into when storing batteries for the winter and what can happen when they aren't properly maintained.
After a long harvest season, it can be easy to forget to add battery maintenance to your pre-storage checklist, and improperly stored batteries can lead to a discharge state, which causes the specific gravity level of the battery acid inside that battery to drop to a level similar to that of water. As this continues over time, this can actually lead to freezing inside the battery, which causes internal damage to the battery plates and other components inside the battery, which can diminish the performance of the battery and could also lead to total failure of the battery come spring when you're ready to pull your equipment out of storage. This, along with vibrations and extreme temperatures, are the leading factors of reduced life in batteries.
He talks about what farmers could do to keep their batteries properly maintained during the winter.
The best way to keep batteries maintained all winter long is by keeping a battery maintainer on them throughout the storage period. This will prevent your batteries from entering a discharge state and help avoid freezing and internal failures. If you are not able to do that, the next best thing is to fully charge your battery prior to storage. If you do so, be sure to check them at least once a month and make sure they are holding a charge. If they are not, be sure to charge them again as needed to ensure the battery reaches its full life.
Again, Josh Goldsworthy is the product manager for batteries with Case IH Aftermarket Solutions. While sorting through information on genetics, trait technologies, and treatment programs, one question emerges. What seed is the right fit? And seed selection is just the start. Crops won't reach maximum yield potential without the right fertility and soil health. BJ Shaben, Wilbur Ellis Director of Seed Technology, shares recommendations to select the right seed for local growing conditions.
Seed is probably the most varied input, but it's also an expensive investment. The one thing that I talk to farmers about is to really look at your field's history, but understand every year is different. If there's a history of disease, pests, weed problems, those will likely be coming up again next year after determining if you're going to be coming back corn on corn, if you're going to be rotated. You need to consider the defensive traits you're going to need to provide for genetics, seed quality, seed treatments. And then the biggest thing that's out there is the service that you would get from that provider.
It's important to select seed that will perform well in a grower's unique conditions.
Seed with locally selected genetics are going to ensure growers that they get a product that's really tailor-made for their field. In addition, companies put out performance trials. There's many independent trials that are out there. Many universities have trial plots. You need to take all of this data and evaluate it for your area so you get it concentrated into a local area to make that best decision.
Shaben says there are factors beyond agronomics as well to consider.
You need to evaluate the seed quality standards. Compare the input cost based on traits and potential return on your investment. Many farmers like to get at least a 3-to-1. Then you're having a winning opportunity there. Ask also the provider if any seed treatments are included. Soybeans in particular, a lot of the pricing you see that's out there does not include a seed treatment price. You also need to consider, is the seed sale just a single transaction, or are they a trusted partner throughout the growing season? Do they have technical agronomic expertise, local knowledge, and integrity to really stand behind the product?
And to set fields up for success, it's critical to have adequate soil fertility and soil health.
At Wilbur Ellis, we recommend sampling and testing soil in the fall. Use a soil test mapping and variable rate application of fertilizer to really deliver the precise nutrients needed in each field. The other big thing is improving soil health over time. And by being able to do this, you reduce fertilizer needs by returning organic matter back to the soil, reducing tillage, and using cover crops and other beneficial practices. The success that a seed starts with long before the seed is actually put into the ground. The best time to start preparing is actually right now.
Again, that's Wilbur Ellis, Director of Seed Technology, BJ Shaben. With cold weather approaching, Director of Animal Welfare at the National Pork Board, Stephanie Wisdom, provides producers with helpful reminders about transporting pigs over the next several months. Transportation doesn't stop, so producers and drivers need to consider air temperature, bedding quality, and time on the road for the welfare of the pigs. She says the first thing drivers could do is follow transport quality assurance guidelines and make sure the truck is completely dry.
Based on the current weather conditions, not whether further down the road or later in the day, but current wet weather conditions. So the bedding is going to keep the pigs from coming in direct contact with the cold metal of the trailer, aids in that moisture control in keeping our pigs dry, and is going to help provide footing for both the driver and the pigs.
Another suggestion when moving pigs is to load less pigs to give them room to move away from the cold side of the trailer. Wisdom says there are several signs that pigs are going through cold stress.
This is going to include pigs with blotchy or red skin, or pigs that are reluctant to move and are just cold to the touch. So we're going to want to make sure that we're getting these pigs, like we said, bedded and boarded properly, but also get them transported quickly and into a warm barn as quickly as we can.
She stresses personal winter safety to both producers and transporters.
Finally, making sure that you're keeping yourself safe. We talk about animal welfare quite a bit, especially when we're thinking about We Care, but our people is also an important part of We Care. So making sure that you're keeping yourself and your employees safe here in winter, making sure you have winter supplies available, an emergency kit.
More information on transportation and barn management can be found at porkcheckoff.org. And to further diversify, U.S. soybean farmers focus on finding new markets while helping to feed a growing global population. One avenue with untapped potential is aquaculture. Philip Good, a Mississippi farmer and United Soybean Board director, says soybean meal is an excellent feed ingredient for aquaculture, also known as fish farming, a sector helping to address global food security.
Food security is a major issue in many developing and emerging countries around the world. And soy-based feed for aquaculture is a growing and sustainable part of that solution to get more affordable protein to many people. And soybean meal is an excellent feed source for aquaculture because of its protein content, its balanced amino acids, and a high level of digestibility for most fish and shrimp species. And many aquaculture diets now contain 25% to 30% soy as a part of that formulation.
Good adds aquaculture represents a significant market opportunity for U.S. soybean farmers.
I started raising catfish in the 90s, along with a lot of other area farmers, to create a new revenue source. I think the soy industry is on the threshold of doing with aquaculture what's been done with chicken, pork, and beef. We've got high quality feed, we've got a reliable product, and soy is sustainable. So I think it's a tool in the tool belt that we need to introduce to other countries and help them to utilize it as well. It's a win for the U.S. soybean farmer, and it's a win for them and their food source.
You can keep up with the latest news from the United Soybean Board at unitedsoybean.org and Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central on RFD TV. That's going to do it for this episode of American Ag Today, produced by the American Ag Network. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a great rest of your day.